Have you ever wanted to engage someone in a conversation, but you were afraid that it was going to start something that, well, frankly, could get out of hand?
Every other hour.
Every other hour. That's your life, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Well, today on Life Talks, we're going to address a topic that's kind of a standalone topic, but I've wanted to get to for some time. And it is how to have a productive conversation with someone who is either a skeptic to your position or maybe even in direct opposition to it. Yeah. So my name is Dan. Today, I am with Josh Brom. I'm a teaching pastor at Life Fellowship, and Josh is the producer of Life Talks. But Josh also is the is a nationally known fixer.
Internationally
yeah. known pro-life advocate who specializes in being able to have hard conversations about pro-life issues from a secular perspective in such a way that it often gets them to consider arguments that previously they had rejected.
And how's boy, that? Do I have my work cut out for me in 2024.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So, but Josh, thanks for sitting in for Ben, who's out of town today.
And it's fun to be here.
You know, since the very first time I met you, you've been one of those guys that's been good for me to know because I tend to be a slash and burner sometimes when I talk and particularly when I write. Just simply because I'd rather put out fires than be bored, I guess. But no, there are times when particularly when I was younger, I was a real bomb thrower. I would throw a bomb in a room, so to speak, verbal bomb, and watch everybody, you know, just get all a Twitter, and I'd kind of enjoy the show. And then I like to step in and try to restore some order to the chaos that I had indeed created.
Interesting. Oh, so that like was that like the always the way it went is you drop this bomb and no one noticed a pattern, then everyone fights, and then you show up as like the sage at the end. Is that kind of how this usually went?
There was a little bit of that going on. Some people got on to me though. As I got older, I started realizing that that may be entertaining, but it's not always productive.
No.
So anyway, the Lord allowed me to meet you. I don't know, a decade ago or how long it's been, but you take the pro-life message onto college campuses or into parts of America where they're not going to listen to a spiritual argument. You quote scriptures to them, they're going to shut you down.
Yep.
But you have a biblical worldview. You come from a Christian perspective, but you have learned to communicate in a way that is not only able to present your point, but it can, in the end, can become productive.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to. So first of all, how'd you get into this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the short version is I started telling people when I was 11, I'd be a pro-life speaker when I grew up, and then I went and did that.
Now, wow. At 11?
11. I got my calling really young. That makes me pretty strange. But I had really great parents. I was homeschooled all the way through high school, which is why I'm so awkward now.
Did you work at Chick-fil-A?
You know, if we had Chick-fil-A in California at the time, I probably would have.
Did you work at In-N-Out?
No, I worked for like a lawn guy. And then I was a Great Harvest guy. My real first job was Great Harvest Bread Company. So I can knead dough like the best of them. We would like do anyway. So we were in a really, really pro-life church. Like they did rescues early on, like back when that was a thing. Not my parents, but the church we were in was hardcore pro-life in Northern California. And so anyway, the short version is there was a group of guys and my dad took me when I was 11 to downtown Sacramento outside of an abortion clinic just to pray. This is a little group of guys on a sidewalk praying in front of this building. No one told me what abortion was. No, I didn't even have to talk yet. I had no idea what was going on. Like, just like bored 11-year-old. I don't understand why we're here. I could feel like there's something kind of maybe important here or whatever. But ultimately that day, my parents would tell me what abortion was. And I went through the series of three emotions. It wasn't anger. I first felt surprise because we grew up in such a... Like, this wasn't a Catholic church, but it was a Protestant church where, like, everyone homeschooled. There were women that wore head coverings. It was very conservative. Yeah. Some pretty big families. And so just the idea that anyone would not want to be pregnant, that would not want to have a kid, was so outside of my bubble. It was like my bubble got pierced for the first time. And then I felt really sad, surprised, sad. And then I just felt like this growing sense of, I guess I'm going to have to stop that when I grow up. Like any overzealous homeschool kid, you know, I'm going to be William Wilberforce when I grow up. I'm going to end this thing all by myself, I actually thought. And then I had nothing to do with it. as far as the passion goes. And so music kind of became the forefront and pro-life stuff became in the background because I didn't have anything to do with it. I read Frank Beckwith's first book that had just come out on it, but I didn't understand half of it. But I was like, I felt intrigued. I felt like this is like what my long-term calling is. And then ultimately, when I was 18, I helped with the Teens for Life group a couple of different places. And I ultimately found like this is what I definitely still want to be doing. I turned this over. I did this career instead of doing a music career. Those were kind of my two big options that I was deciding between. And my parents raised me with kind of having eternal impact, kind of a, you know, like the great Christian parents do, right? And so it's like, there's so many great worship leaders. There's so many amazing musicians. There's not that many good young pro-life speaker guys. True. And so I felt like if this is where I can have an eternal impact, then I want to. And I want to do that.
So how old were you when you did your first presentation? So
18 years old.
And were you on a college campus or where were you at?
No, that would have been just like more like internal stuff. So like we ended up doing this trip down to Fresno where we accidentally started a Teens for Life group. It's not like God did this big thing with us. And so like we were doing presentations, like training people how to do things. My first like outreach was after the first Teens for Life meeting I had at 18, 3 days later, we were at the Sacramento Capitol for 3 days. Whoa. In front of something called the Genocide Awareness Project, which is a large set of very graphic abortion signs. This isn't what my organization does, but we were with an organization that did that, that basically uses graphic images to compare abortion to other forms of genocide. And the argument is that abortion is a form of genocide. That's not an argument that I would make, but that's their argument. So we did that for 3 days. And suddenly, as we're talking to pro-choice people who are just like walking by, some of those arguments that I'd read when I was 11 and like these philosophy books started kind of coming back. So then I got like really excited and just like it felt like God was doing something and I got very passionate. And my parents, to their credit, let me be involved. We already knew we were moving across the country in like 6 months. So I'm now building all these new friendships that I'm about to like lose. But I felt like there was something significant going on and they let me do it. And then it became what I do for a living.
So I assume your strategies, your approach has morphed over the years.
Oh yeah.
So and what precipitated that?
So a lot of dialogue mainly and maybe some friendships with pro-choice people. So in the beginning, I was like any other pro-life apologist, I was quoting the smarter guys that came before me. And so, you know, we were all doing that. And then as I had a lot of dialogues with pro-choice people on college campuses and was around some people I really respected who also had that. And then especially I started having pro-choice friendships that would go on over a period of, you know, years eventually. And the combination of those things really affected the way that I think it ought to look like when pro-life and pro-choice people have conversations, and it's different than the way that it usually looks, unfortunately. And so kind of that this is probably just true of many kind of people is like in the beginning, I'm kind of just like, you know, we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. And then pretty soon I'm having more and more unique thoughts. And then as politically, I kind of started shifting and things like that. And then more and more transition kind of kept on happening.
Yeah. You know, as our country has become increasingly polarized politically,
yeah,
and because of issues like abortion, what we find, you know, is that a lot of times we're not responding to the people, we're responding to the perceptions of the people and the arguments that we've commonly heard.
Yes.
And so the conversation in many ways is over before it starts.
Yeah.
How do you combat that?
We've got to try to actually listen better than we don't know how much we need to listen. Pro-lifers, I guess this is probably most people, but I pick on pro-lifers and Christians because they're on my team and I'm, this is what I'm paying attention to. We tend to get really overconfident in our abilities to defend the pro-life view. We think that it's a very simple issue. It's either black or white. It's okay to kill babies or it's not okay to kill babies. Like this, some people, literally a professional pro-lifer told me that one time. Mm-hmm. Super wrong. It's really complicated. It's philosophically complicated. Maybe it's theologically not that complicated. But once you start getting into some of the really interesting, the David Boonens and Michael Tooleys and Judith Sarfath Thompson, like the really smart atheist pro-choice philosophers who are smarter than most pro-lifers I know, then it's like, well, how do we meet that? We need to do better than just bumper sticker slogans and, right, and graphic images and things like that. Like, I want us to respond to with really good philosophical arguments. And so we need to try to listen to what they're saying and ask a bunch of questions and actually fully understand the strong version of their argument before we even respond. And that's, I think, a lot of the key right now is we're not even doing that. Yeah. We are just so, as you said, like, if I'm talking to a pro-choice person, then I know exactly who they are, and I know who they listen to and what they think and who they vote for and all the stuff. And a lot of times pro-choice people do the same thing the other direction. And I'm like, I need to get this person to see me. I can't have them seeing other pro-lifers. I'm not like most pro-lifers. I don't want to be compared to most pro-lifers. I want them to see who I am. And so I've got to humanize myself. And so, like, a lot of the first things I was thinking about as I started thinking about this more is, like, so much of what I'm doing on a college campus is I'm trying to surprise them. Hmm. I'm trying to remind them or show them that I'm not who they think I am. I don't just necessarily agree with everything Ben Shapiro says. And so I'm looking for those common ground opportunities on political views that I have that are more liberal, that I can usually find common ground on a college campus. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those powerful things I can do on the campus. Because pretty soon we get to the point where they're like, wait a minute. Okay, so you're kind of this weird, like, centrist, you know, whatever guy. And you can make better pro-choice arguments than I can. And you're still pro-life, that raises interesting questions. And at some point, they become intrigued. And it's so much better than what they were expecting that then they want to continue that conversation.
Well, do you ever find that you get criticized or at least misunderstood by traditional pro-life proponents?
Constantly. We get more hate mail from pro-lifers than pro-choice people. Pro-choice people like us for the most part. There's a lot of pro-lifers that like us. And there's a lot of pro-lifers that think that we're compromisers. There's pro-lifers that don't like that I talk about being open-minded, like actually fully, truly open-minded about, like, all pretty much all of your beliefs, you know, even your religious ones, which is a hard, you know, step for a lot of people to go. There's pro-lifers that don't like that we don't have graphic pictures on science. There's pro-lifers that don't like that I am not fully convinced that birth control pills cause all these early abortions that, like, you know, Randy Alcorn and people like that have been saying for a long time. Like, I'm skeptical of certain, like, kinds of factual claims, or I might think philosophically different about some of these claims. And then you have all of these different reasons for pro-lifers who feel very strongly to really not like me or whatever, yeah, because I am I'm not what they want me to be.
Yeah. So let's move that away, or this conversation away, a little bit from the pro-life thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've experienced this as well.
Yeah.
I've often made a joke, and it's part of my personality, I think, that I often say, if I find myself accidentally on a bandwagon, the first thing I do is try to jump off of it.
Oh,
so I just,
like that.
I just don't particularly like being on the same tangent everybody else is at any given time. Hmm. You and I, having talked privately, know each other, politically have some same views. We're both not particularly fond of a certain leading Republican standard bearer.
The orange one.
orange one, yeah. And in the process, a lot of times, I've lost friendships of decades simply because I view things differently.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, that's okay, because if I'm going to lose a relationship over something so superficial as who I vote for, there wasn't much of a relationship to begin with.
Yeah.
But here's where many of my friends don't seem to understand the opportunity. I've had so many great gospel opportunities, so many opportunities to form relationships with people that I never would have before, simply because, I mean, I'm still, you know, I call myself a Reagan conservative, you know, I'm still a conservative guy, but I'm not a populist.
Yeah.
And most people don't even understand the difference between those two. But what would you say to someone who is wanting to engage somebody that may overall still not be in alignment with them, but you want the opportunity to be able to talk about more important things than politics or sports teams or whatever, you know?
That's a great question. So this is why I became really passionate about convincing or trying to, I don't know, persuade or inspire pro-life people or Christians to be friends with people who are different from them. Because frankly, most people don't change their mind in one conversation about anything.
That's so true.
It happens, like, if the stars align. We see it happen on outreaches, but, like, there's got to be a lot of things happening sort of simultaneously. That's the exception, not the norm. The norm is people need months at least to change their mind about something significant. And so we are just so quick to get frustrated with people for not just like instantly changing their mind to our view, when we wouldn't do that either.
Like, not in a million years.
Anyone listening to this could sit down at a bar with Sam Harris and lose to a debate with him, and you wouldn't immediately become an atheist. Like, you would come and like find Dan or Ben and like, mm-hmm. and then start asking questions. But like, it would take you a period of time to wrestle with like all the kinds of like those deep beliefs, and abortion touches all kinds of kind of deep worldview. And you know, what do we think about sex and relationships and family and everything like that? And so I am trying to have the long game in mind. Like, any conversation I have with someone, we can have more later if I don't ruin this friendship right mm-hmm. now. And so our motto when we're in a conversation is that every conversation is a series of difficult judgment calls amidst prayer without ceasing. Every conversation is a series of difficult judgment calls amidst prayer without ceasing. And so like, when we're in those conversations, I'm trying to figure out, how do I love this person really well? Mm-hmm. Not how do I make them pro-life? Not how do I even get them on their knees before the cross in humility? And there's a lot of people say, like, you've got to do that both in one. It's like, that's a big day for anyone
no kidding.
Who does any of those things. Like, don't think it's going to both happen. It's like, it is completely fine for me to hang out with my pro-choice lesbian friend and hang out and abortion not come up mm-hmm. or sexuality not come up. Like, that's totally fine. It will every once in a while. Like, friends talk about stuff, mm-hmm. but like, once you've trusted each other, once mm-hmm. you've got that like kind of like where you don't have to feel like this person's going to jump down your throat because you said something they disagreed with. And so if we can have the long game in mind, remember, like, God loves these people so much more than we do. And so if we think of, you know, we're dropping seeds and we're doing our best and we're tilling soil, and sometimes we will see the fruit happen and sometimes that we won't. But that's okay, because the results are God's anyway.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to a parent or even maybe a spouse, somebody that your best friend, and they're making choices that you fundamentally, they're not just mere disagreements, they violate your conscience.
Yeah.
What would you say to the parent who had a child who decided to live in, an immoral lifestyle, or who decided to, become trans, mm-hmm. or someone who had their childhood friend, all of a sudden became an atheist.
Yeah,
somebody they went to Sunday school with, for mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. How would you say that we should approach them in this most intimate, of previous relationships, and now all of a sudden we've got this issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, to start with, I think we could always start with rereading. Luckily there is a great parable where someone that you were close with suddenly completely goes away and goes off the deep end and then comes back expecting there to be a real relationship and finds the opposite. And so how can we be more like Christ in that way? How can we be more like the dad? For me, I think a lot of maybe what I'm doing that's working with my friends who think differently than me is that beyond the open-mindedness thing, like, there's reason for us to talk to each other because we could change each other's minds. So mm-hmm. there's like, it's not just like this game or chess game or whatever, like there's an actual purpose to it, but also like we really care about each other. And I think one of the most powerful things that I probably do, and we have an article on this on our blog, and I could send you links if we want to put them in the description. We basically tell people, if you can say this honestly, say this to everyone you talk to. You can't offend me. To say, I promise you can't offend me. Because like Gen Z doesn't want to offend anybody on both sides. And so you get this thing sometimes where people aren't even really having real conversations because we're so stepping on eggshells. And I want to be like, you can't offend me unless you try. Like, you'll offend my mom, fine. But like, generally, like, just because you say, well, I think abortion doesn't kill babies. Like, I'm not going to be like, how dare you? It's like, of course you don't. Of course you don't. That's the way you're like, of course, talk about that. And so be unoffendable. Be able to have this person say, I'm really concerned about the candidate that you're planning on voting for this year, whichever one it is. People are really concerned about both of them for lots of good reasons. So, like, try to not be so entrenched in your thing. It's like, we're the good guys, they're the enemies. And so as soon as they're against my guy, they're instantly the enemy. It's like, try to understand, why would this person I care about, this person who might love Jesus also, be saying that they're going to vote for the other guy, mm-hmm. and that they're really concerned about my guy? Like, is it possible that maybe I'm missing some important thing? I think, like, this is, if we can help people with both the epistemic humility thing of understanding we don't know everything, mm-hmm. there's stuff that we're missing that we can learn from each other, from other wise people, iron sharpening iron, like that's how it's supposed to be, and then just be sort of unoffendable and intrigued and want to know, why do people think differently? And kind of go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you say is so wise. So many times people just want to respectfully be heard.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not as intent even necessarily on convincing us as we walk into the conversation intent on convincing them.
Yes.
But in the end, we build a wall by refusing to at least, is this what you're saying? You know, yes. Is this what you're trying to communicate? Yeah. Is this what you believe? Asking those questions that kind of come back to us. We're out of time, but Josh, I know your website has a lot of resources that you've put together, and it also kind of showcases your style and so forth. So give a shout out to that, if you would. Tell people how they can find out more information.
Yeah, you can find us at equalrightsinstitute.com, Equal Rights Institute. There's a blog, there's a podcast, there's a bunch of YouTube videos, there's TikTok videos. So we have options regardless of how you want to learn how to respond to pro-choice people in ways that are not super offensive or not intrinsically theological. We have stuff at Equal Rights Institute, and we would just love for, and anyone that's interested in wanting to learn more, I'm local. Yes, you know, happy to talk to you. We have a lot of work to do this year, and we want to help people dialogue.
Let me just double down and say, really, seriously, go to equalrightsinstitute.com and take a look at what Josh does. Josh, again, as I said earlier, has been one of those guys who has changed me, and not a lot of people do that.
Wow.
And I've still got a long way to go, but to have somebody of his intellect, but also his skill set, to be an advocate for a position that I hold to, but I'm not articulate enough to do what he does, has been something that has caused me to grow and change and mature, I hope, in my own way. And I think he'll be a benefit to you. Go by. Hey, and by the way, there's a place you can donate on his website. I encourage you to do that, because we are supporters of what he does as well. So as always, we thank you for joining us here as we tackle a variety of conversations on Life Talks. We want to equip you, we want to challenge you, and we want to poke you in the brain. So I hope you'll continue to listen in. But until next time, thanks as always for joining us here at Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.